Now I'm like, yeah, Jason, God.
That's not what I said to
you. Sometimes this whole podcast is a dark comedy.
It really is.
So, but it's got its light moments.
Yeah. It does.
It is the next meeting.
I'm going to go ahead and stop.
Okay.
What I think would be good is if you gaveled to the tune of Jingle Bells. Much better.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. With that festive, if you couldn't guess, jingle bell and gavel bang.
No, you run the surprise.
Gavel bang sounds like
gavel bang.
Gavel bang bang you into the night.
Tell us more about what a gavel bang entails.
It's all right.
Aren't you so glad you're here for this?
So glad.
We'd like to welcome you all to the next meeting of the Missing Movie Club. We're doing another little select screen. We've got a special guest with us. He is from the Georgia chapter of the Missing Movie Club.
Right, from ATL to STL, even though nobody calls Atlanta Hotlanta, just so you know that.
That's true. I've always heard you call it Hotlanta.
No, you haven't. Not once. Not once in many years.
Call it Mylanta.
Yeah, oh, Mylanta.
Our guest today is Peter.
How big is your chapter down there?
It's growing. It's growing. That's what's important.
Look, he's a grower, not a shower.
Yeah, yeah. We don't measure by
they don't measure
quantity,
by...
it's quality.
It's definitely quality.
Let's focus on that. So which is where my movie tastes come in as well. I enjoy many, many films. Such as The House of Yes is one of my favorites, and Pleasantville is always a nice, reliable watch. Steel Magnolias, of course. I do not enjoy some other films, such as Event Horizon. It's not... That is...
I thought we were going to get along. That is,
we'll make it through this without taking a ship to hell.
Right. One held eyeball at a time.
Yeah, that was that movie scarred me for life at an early age. So, I enjoy those. Anything by Christopher Guest. Parker Posey is one of my absolute favorite actors of all time.
National treasure.
But yes, thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so glad you're here. And as already, the usual bunch of morons as you're used to around the table.
And then John.
I don't think in my contract as the talent of this show does it allow for me to be put down.
Sorry, our beautiful, wonderful, intelligent
Jason
cells. Biggest bunch of jolly, what is the jolliest assholes? The
biggest
side?
Bunch of jolliest assholes this side of something.
Something, yeah. Anyway. So I'm Chris.
Horrible
you know
movie
me.
Podcast. We don't even know the quote.
Yeah.
Pamela doesn't even want to admit she's here.
Happy holidays. This is Pamela. I'm here with
sound like you're being
a bunch of white guys.
Let me
bunch of white guys. Jesus.
I'm John. I'm here.
Hi, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me. The talent has arrived. I'm Jason.
Hi, Jason. Hi.
So, normally during our club meetings, we have the treasurer, the president, that kind of thing. And we've been kind of unfortunately busy with the holidays, so we're just doing a little more loosey-goosey format. But starting in the new year, we will be back adhering to the great pride and tenets of our club.
The rules we have to look up on our own website
every time. So this holly jolly festive edition, we watched The Ref, 1994, with Dennis Leary in the starring role. I am the only one actually that has seen this. For those out there, we always give our brief synopsis. It basically is a movie. Dennis Leary plays a thief who is burglarizing a wealthy neighborhood in December, and this is Christmas Eve. He is burglarizing the amusement park king's house, who is in Aruba or something, they say, where he's at.
In
Barbados or something. And during the burglarization, he had the homeowner had set up a trap, and Dennis Leary unfortunately falls into that trap, being left behind by his getaway driver, and ends up kidnapping Kevin Spacey's wife, Judy Davis, and takes them home. They're expecting a big family dinner. Kevin Spacey and her are having problems. The husband and wife are having problems, thinking of divorce. So Dennis Leary comes into play because he's basically playing a referee between those two characters for the most of the movie. The rest of the family shows up. The grandma's horrible. Everybody hates her.
Christine Baranski shows up.
Christine Baranski is in it as well.
Just a real quick side note. We're looking at the IMDb page right now, and the picture for the kid that plays the son looks like it's straight out of Lassie in 1952.
Yeah. I looked him up. He's only been in about 10 things.
So were I guess that was mostly a screenwriter now. All
right. Yeah, the ref. It becomes a Christmas movie because of obviously this happens all on Christmas Eve. And they're having their festive family dinner and arguing ensues. Dennis Leary steps in, which actually Dennis Leary has some pretty good acting chops in this. He really kind of shows it. He does his kind of normal shtick of yelling and cussing a lot, but he does also show some decent amount of control and
felt like he had less wise ass. Like he was like, sassing him, but he wasn't Dennis Leary's normal level of wise ass.
I can agree with that. So it wasn't a huge box office draw by any means. It only made like $11 million.
Again, they didn't market it the right way.
They didn't. And Dennis Leary actually kind of, I looked up, he had some quotes along those lines that he thought they kind of dropped the ball on the marketing. His quote was, "They did me like the MTV guy and they shortchanged what the movie was all about." Roger Ebert said he gave it 3 out of 4 stars. He wrote, "Materials like this are only as good as the acting and writing, and the ref is skillful in both areas." So, I mean, that's pretty high praise from Roger Ebert.
Give us the Leary cut.
Yeah.
Give us the
Leary cut. Apparently in other countries it was called Hostile Hostages.
Okay.
Was apparently the title when it was released.
That's not difficult to say at all.
No, Hostile Hostages. Yeah, I enjoyed the movie when I originally saw it back in 94 in high school.
I remember seeing the cover at the video store, but it was never enough to draw me in.
Yeah, and it was rated R. I'm sure that would have left out some audiences. It's not really your feel-good family Christmas movie. But it definitely is totally 90s.
Yeah.
From the opening credits.
Very nice.
I love the suits and ties the cops are wearing when they're going to go home. Mm-hmm. Like it's just chef's kiss. 1993.
And when you see like the front at the beginning and the kids running in front of the store and they're wearing the wind suits.
Oh, yeah.
The neon peak wind suits.
Oh, what? Neon pink wind suits.
It's a penguin.
I could pull up the artwork again because I wanted to see if there was anything Christmas on it, and there's not.
Yeah, I enjoyed the opening of the movie. I like the music, but it's definitely a product of its time because it goes from this heartwarming, like Christmassy music opening right into this enigma sounding music that, you know, Delirium and things like that, where it's a little new agey.
hey, leave Enya.
Maybe
alone.
Not Enya. But along those lines.
We don't have the rights for that.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I saw was written, the music was written by Dave Stewart of the Eurythmics.
So that makes sense. Yeah. So there you go.
Okay.
I mean, they were clearly going for like the dark comedy side of it. I am curious if we watched the trailer to see how they did this.
Like, I thought they made it a comedy in the trailer for some reason.
I think this would be on more best Christmas movie list. Like, I would have seen this by now if they had had a different title and put a little more into that. But on the other hand, you could do this story and have it not be Christmas.
That's what I was getting ready to say. Like, you could take this out. You could put this at Halloween. You could put it at Thanksgiving. You could just put it at a birthday
family
party
reunion
for that bitch
day.
Of a mom.
Yeah, like, yeah. No, it definitely doesn't need to be a Christmas movie by any means, but I think it kind of adds.
I wonder if it was intended to not be Christmas, and they said we need to do something to make this a little bit more because they wanted to release it.
We were talking
Christmas.
About that earlier.
Do we know what time of year they released it? Was this one of those Christmas movies that came out in June, kind of a thing? Like,
that's a good question.
That would be better on Wikipedia.
But I think it did come out at Christmas. I'm almost positive for some reason.
Wikipedia? No, March.
March.
Oh, okay. March 11th. There you go.
Oh, so that's
they totally mismarketed.
So they had no faith in this movie if it came out in March.
Yeah. They said it was going to bomb. And it really does come down to marketing because this is actually a decent
film. I mean, it's rated fresh, 73% on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, now we know Jason's feeling on Rotten Tomatoes. They're all a bunch of liars, but
I don't feel that great about Rotten Tomatoes
I don't always trust it.
Yeah. It's a bunch of fanboys.
Oh, this was the film debut of J.K. Simmons. This is his worst role.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Oh.
That's fun.
He never had small hair.
Yeah, he never had hair. He always looked old.
J. Jonah Jameson himself.
Oh, he's the best.
Yeah.
Commissioner J. Jonah Jameson.
Commissioner.
The grandmother, though.
Oh, the mom.
Yes. Glynis Johns.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she is amazing in everything that she's in. I love, love, love her in While You Were Sleeping. She was absolutely fantastic, made that movie.
And I know only 40% of the crowd in this room will give a shit, but she was really hot back in the day in The Court Jester.
Well, what's interesting, though, is you showed that the picture they had, when she had my picture on the mantle, it was of a younger...
Is that the actual percentage?
There's five individuals.
20% per person.
Two don't like ladies. Well, three don't like ladies.
It's not that we don't like them.
I feel very pointed. And I didn't appreciate it.
But the hotness factor, you're right, does fall. We do fall short of that.
Okay.
This film does get a bonus point because B.D. Wong is in it.
Yes.
Playing Dr. Wong, which is also the character he played on Law & Order SVU. Yeah,
well, it's easy for him to remember his name.
And it's also the character he plays in my mind because he's a hottie.
Yeah, I feel like
What does BD stand for, Jason?
I can't
fit
on the show.
Yes, you can.
I was going to say, we're M.
I feel like they really played into that 90s, like, everybody was all about, like, divorce rates in the 90s and very much dysfunctional families and therapy
became big. Yeah, people started going to therapy more.
Burglars were all the rage.
Burglars.
Were the rage. The Real McCoy?
Yeah. That movie? Well, Home Alone, that started that whole thing, you know? It is very much a product of its age, like, everything about it. But you can still watch it now and understand it and appreciate it.
Yeah. You know? No, I mean, you could easily remake this for today. Yeah. There wasn't anything that completely dated it except for the car cell phone. Yeah.
Well,
minus a slur here.
Yeah.
And
there. Oh yeah,
there was a slur. There was an F word
and
we don't
use. Weird. It was the
dogs.
Yeah, and like we talked about how the sheriff character like really served no purpose because he doesn't really interact with helping track down Dennis Leary. He gets fired halfway through the movie. They put him in there just I don't know if to be unlikable or what they.
Yeah. Setting the tone for the town being inept at being able to handle this kind of thing and why it's not being taken care of.
You could have done that with the two cops, though.
Well,
yeah.
The slur thrown in there was just kind of an odd...
It makes me think of the slur. So in Freddy vs. Jason, there was the one slur by Kelly Rowland, and they said that she added it, and they kept it in, and it was like, it's not really needed.
Yeah, it was no,
it doesn't
like,
serve a purpose.
Yeah, they could have used any term, to like, because he's talking about the neighbors only calling when their dogs are getting amorous with each other. You know, he could have used any kind of term.
I mean, but it was 94.
No.
I mean, if we're looking at the time period,
true.
That is what you expect from the tough asshole cop.
Does it should still happen?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's the right thing.
No,
I'm
but I think that if you were to release the Leary cut, you could easily cut that word out.
Oh yeah.
I think even Leary would have been like, yeah, cut that word out.
After seeing that, because it's been a minute since I'd watched it, I'm thinking, oh man, is there other, like, and not through the rest of the movie.
No.
Nothing else.
Do you remember that movie, The Monster Squad?
Oh yeah.
I loved that movie as a kid. As an adult, I think it's trash now because they keep using the F slur.
They do. No,
instead of saying the word pedophile. And I think that is a choice. And I think that was a choice by the writer because they were ignorant and didn't understand that there's an actual difference.
Well, yeah.
I couldn't enjoy it as an adult anymore.
I definitely.
Because they
can...
said that word so
much.
Many
they do.
Times.
You're right.
That's kind of like when we watched Out Cold. Like, I loved Out Cold back in the day when it first came out and stuff. And then you watch it again and there's a lot of that's gay so much thrown into it that it's like it's cringeworthy now.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like watching even watching old movies from like the 40s and the 50s and there's a great Alfred Hitchcock movie, Lifeboat. And it's about all these people who are on a boat during World War II. The boat blows up and they get in a rowboat and they have to figure out how to survive because there's no other ships around. And one of the guys is black and they call him Charcoal.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the women who's played by one of B. Arthur's famous rivalries, Tallulah Bankhead. And Tallulah's like, that's okay. Many of my friends are Charcoal. And you're like, it's hard to kind of hear it now as adults. I don't want that to be the focus of this episode. It just took us out. I remember because we all kind of were like, whoa.
Yeah. And I remember being in high school at that time. You know, it was the word. And like,
I would never use that word, but it was the word.
I mean, for a while, Grease was the word.
It was. God, that was a dirty... Was
a dirty, dirty movie, man. They've got some stuff in there.
First of all, have you listened to the lyrics of Grease Lightning?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Gee, I was a kid singing that out loud.
Oh, yeah. The girls,
my little homosexual self had no idea when I would sing the Chicks Will Cream what he was meaning.
It's a real pussy wagon.
Until
they re-released it. We went and saw when they re-released it in like when I was in my like 20s in the movie theater, and I never realized they said pussy wagon in it. And I'm like, holy...
you know, we were watching Die Hard last night, and just the amount of unnecessary boobage just thrown into a movie always in the 80s.
Boobage is never unnecessary. Thank you.
They all, well, that's, I mean, yeah, that, well, that's like Airplane, the movie Airplane. It was, and it, well, what, what's,
I beg to differ.
I mean, you know.
What's funny, though, is that they don't, just if look you look away, at a lot child. Of those movies, as long as there wasn't violence in it, they were PG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the Airplane was PG, but there's a scene, a woman runs and just...
Oh, yeah, right in the camera.
Gratuitous nudity, yeah. Funny, we've talked about before, the Dewey Cox.
The Walk Hard?
We Walk Hard, yeah. Yeah, Dewey Cox.
I did not enjoy it enough through the preview.
Really? You didn't see it? It's funny. It's got to, yeah. Well, it's funny in it, though, they do that. They have the scene where they are, like, they show women... all like full nudity, and then they keep like doing like where the with men now they used to do all the time where they would kind of strategically put where you could, and then all of a sudden it's just dick like right in your face, and it's so well timed.
Is it attractive dick? Because now I'm interested.
Yeah, it's a decent, yeah. I mean, it's
so, do you happen to know exactly where in the movie?
Did it at all look like a Muppet nose?
No, it did not. But it's so, like I said, but it was such a, it was just, it was a play on that, that, you know, they'll show female nudity constantly,
yeah,
but they're always disguised, but then the dude just turns around, man, it's right there. It's beautiful.
Do you remember the point of the South Park movie when South Park
when they did
bigger
that,
longer and uncut, right, and they went after them because of all the, they gave them an R rating because of the foul language, and they said, wait, are you telling us that if we take out the foul language we can have all the violence and all the cartoon nudity we want and you'll give us a PG-13? And like, yeah, and they were like, this is how stupid this system is.
Yeah,
is your rating system is like, you can't have naughty words, but you can show 14 pairs of cartoon boobs and a peener.
Yeah.
Naughty words are just, it's bullshit anyway.
Well, and that's what this movie, when you think about it, that's the only reason this movie was R. Mm-hmm. It's because they use fuck too many times.
Oh, God, which is fine.
We saw the new Violent Night, and we'll give you spoilers away, but there's a lot of violence, no nudity, and a lot of bad words.
Yeah.
I love bad words.
Me too. Yeah.
That's a great movie, though, too. Bad words. Have you seen that with Jason Bateman? Mm-hmm. And he finds a loophole in a spelling bee that, as long as you haven't graduated eighth grade, and he dropped out of school, but he's like a genius, and he goes to the spelling bee for these 8-year-old kids, and he's trying to knock them all out. It is a great movie. Yeah, it's called Bad Words.
Sounds fun.
Oh, it's great with him, and he's just like his perfect just self in it.
I enjoy some Jason Bateman.
Yeah,
always.
You know, we had a conversation earlier before the show began about actors who just start playing themselves. Do you think Jason Bateman hits that?
Yeah.
He's just Jason Bateman in every movie.
I'm okay with it. I mean, if you look at Ozark, he's a very dark, dark version of himself, though.
Ooh,
you know?
I've never seen it.
Oh,
I loved him in Paul.
If you like Jason Bateman,
the Alien movie?
It's a great show.
Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, he's great in that movie. Says my favorite cuss word when I was a kid. It's motherfucking titty sucking two ball bitch, and he said it in the movie, and we used to say that all the time when we were kids. Like, I love that.
Yeah,
it's a lot to get out.
It is a lot to get out, but he says it like perfect. And the first time we saw it in the theater, I like laughed the hardest out of everybody.
That's a lot.
Yeah,
I remember people saying that when I was little.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I always say cuss words in the same order when I hurt myself, and you can tell how badly I've hurt myself by what words come out.
No,
but I couldn't tell you what those words are right now.
Kicker.
It's like a meter.
kicker in the shin.
If she gets through like four of the words, you know she's at like a level four.
Yeah.
So if it's just like, damn, it's like a half a point.
Yeah. It's like, I can't even say it. It's like something.
Yeah, and I can't
goddamn
remember exactly how it goes.
Either. Shit. Yeah. Something. I mean, they're not in order of like badness of word.
They're
just in a random order.
What I think we have decided here is that the MPAA rating system is bullshit.
Pretty much. Thing. And it is funny how you kind of notice that nobody else really else cusses in the movie until like getting later into everybody's starting to get that frayed edge, and then like everybody starts cussing. And I did like it
when the two women called each other a bitch as they were watching.
That
was some great timing.
Yeah.
I don't know that much about Dennis Leary. Like, I've never seen anything else with him in it.
Oh, yes, really? You have. Amazing Spider-Man. He was Gwen Stacy's dad.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
That's like the only other movie
and
I can name him
Edgar
in.
Edgar Friendly in Demolition Man. He was the
I've
underground.
Never seen
what is it?
I've never
Rescue,
seen Demolition
Rescue Me
Man.
Was his,
yeah,
his
Rescue
fire
big
truck
thing,
show.
Yeah,
and
Rescue Me.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
He was recently on last season of Law and Order Organized Crime, playing a crooked cop who led a group of other crooked cops.
So did he start as a stand-up comedian?
Yeah, he was a stand-up. Yeah. And he was on MTV. They did little blurbs in between, like where he just rants about shit. Mm. And then that was his stand-up act.
Did he do a commercial too at some point?
Yeah, yeah. He was with somebody for a while.
I forget who it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are we going to talk about the spacey in the room?
The spacey.
Yeah, because it's hard. I was really uncomfortable because the acting in this, every single person, including the kids, and I generally don't like child actors. We know this. I think we've talked about it on the show. Kid actors piss me off. Even the three kids did a really great job. There was a scene that I even said to all of you in the therapist's office. And anytime that Kevin Spacey and Judy Davis argue, they did such a great job of not overdoing it. You felt the raw emotion, like the raw reactions. And so it's hard for me to be like, I really enjoyed this movie, knowing who Kevin Spacey is. We all know what he is. We all know. Right? Yeah. And
it's just hard because the fact is he was a great actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with everything that's come out, it's still hard to, it's like the J.K. Rowling thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really hard to separate the art from the artist.
Yeah.
I was having the same thoughts during that opening scene. It just started off really strong because, like, I couldn't not watch his facial expressions. Every time he responded, I was just like, wow, that just feels like, you know, like he's just acting with every part of his body right now. But then you think, oh, I'm not supposed to enjoy this guy. But, you know, it's...
But see, I kind of look at it in that. I do understand that. But sometimes you do, you just have to look at the character. Yeah, the person behind the character can be a monster. I don't know. You do have to, like, enjoy the whole... You know, it's kind of like me with, like, studying World War II. I can't study World War II and, you know, I enjoy things about World War II. And I even enjoy things with regards to, like, the German army. Because it's a part of the whole. Now, what happened was horrific and there's no, you know... It's not like, oh, I love Hitler. You know what I mean? It's not a...
I was like, where the hell is this going?
No,
I don't know. I'm like, this is going to an edit.
No.
Please no. Don't Kanye on us.
No, not at all. But I'm saying, when studying the totality of World War II, it has to be a part of it.
Well, and there was on another episode of a certain podcast, Gavin with Kason, available now.
I heard it's ending soon.
It is not.
Oh, rumors.
Rumors. If it ends, this ends.
What is it? Ouch. Doesn't she look tired?
I was talking with one of my mentors about acting and taking on roles. And he was like, you know, is there a part in a musical that you would play? And we were talking about the musical, The Producers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And how, like, I would love to play one of the producers. I'd love to play the Nathan Lane part. Mm-hmm. I think I'd be great, even though I'm a raging homosexual. And I think that would make it funnier. But I said I would also love to play...
Nathan Lane.
Right, I know, right. I would also love to play Will Ferrell's part. And he goes, so you'd want to play Hitler. And I was like, no.
Well, in the original,
you would
though,
have to. Right, in the original movie.
He wasn't Hitler. Correct. It was separate. Yeah.
But then, off mic, we talked a little bit about the fact that as actors, you can't judge your character. Because if you go in judging your character, you are not doing that character justice. You have to look at your character and say, okay, what are the motivations? Which means you have to find the good things about Hitler. How hard of that as an actor? So what's the Evan Peters from St. Louis?
Oh, yeah.
Right? He played Dahmer. Mm-hmm. He's played a lot of really dark characters for Ryan Murphy. He's even said, like, I've had nightmares. This is exhausting. This is really messing with my brain because I have to find the good to make this person relatable because I can't go. If you go in and judge your character, you're not going to do it, right? So I think it's just...
Well, speaking of that, though, which, real quick, going on a tangent, which do you enjoy? Do you enjoy the original producers or the new producers?
Oh, I think they're so good separately.
Okay. I'd take that.
Yeah, I like the original, but I love I'm a homosexual. I love a theater.
Well,
I love musicals.
But
I think they're both great.
But I don't like that they had the German become Hitler. I love the original when they had the, like, hippie come in and be Hitler.
Yeah.
And that when I watched the movie, like I said, I love Will Ferrell. But when I saw that, took me out of it a little bit.
I think that was a choice for financial reasons.
I think so, too. Right? Like, you're paying Will Ferrell that much money.
Well, and I think it's the stage musicals the same way, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Where it's like...
They do the same character.
I mean, hippies aren't funny anymore, either.
That's true.
Well, yeah,
that was a funny thing when the original...
But it was still... They still kept it in the same era, though.
Yeah.
They didn't change... They didn't modernize it. So that's where I thought, you know, you're right, though. It is for the audience.
It was for the audience.
Yeah, it was for the audience. I get it. Anyway, that was just my little tangent.
I mean, this show is nothing but tangents.
No, that's true. We should call it the missing movie tangent.
So let's talk about cat collars.
Yes.
We haven't covered that this episode.
Like cat collars or like cat collars?
Like, hey, baby. Or like, hey, put some bells on that cat collar so I can hear
it. Cat fashion accessory, but I like the other one better, so let's go with that.
How about a cat collar? that a cat wears that says "Hey, baby" when it walks through the room. Yeah.
The I would be down for that.
The cat would just walk up to you and be like, "Hey, what you doing?"
I think smile. All cat lovers would love that.
Hey, daddy.
Except for Jason. Jason would probably enjoy that.
I would not. I mean, it's not that everything's I hate cats. I don't hate cats.
He's allergic to them.
You know what? If the cat says you're cute when it comes in the room, he might start to like them more.
I do run on affection.
It's got to be the right kind. The cat caller needs to do cat calls to get Jason.
Yeah,
on board.
Hey, daddy.
Hey, daddy. Give me a treat, daddy.
Speaking of animals, I was surprised.
Speaking of daddies?
Speaking of animals, I was kind of surprised they didn't have a dog in this.
I mean, because that only at the very beginning.
Just
yeah.
Cannibal.
Yeah,
just
what that, was the dog's name?
Cannibal.
Cannibal. But I'm talking about like a family pet.
Yeah, I agree.
Usually that's the thing that families did to like try to fix things. We'll get a little pet and everybody will be. And like then having the dog be dysfunctional as well.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Being neglected, you know, and like having to deal with.
It would have been funny if the dog was just like over everything and just laid down. Well, that's didn't give any shit.
I think it would have been interesting because then you could have had Dennis Leary playing off the dog.
Yeah.
Because Dennis Leary is kind of that outsider, but then being like actually relating to the dog. Because the dog's just like done with everybody's bullshit. But I was kind of shocked that they didn't have a pet of some sort.
Yeah, well, they did rep cats pretty well with that booby trap.
That's true.
I do enjoy a nice booby trap.
Yeah, they kept that joke going through the whole.
Yeah,
they
to did. To the last the smell. Statement, basically.
What's
yeah.
that smell? But cat urine does, man. You get cat urine, you cannot get rid of that smell for anything.
Unmistakable
like,
scent.
Yeah, it is. It is. So that is funny that it, even though he put on cologne and tried to like mask it.
With the trap that the guy put together. In my head, he's Mr. Fish Odor from Bob's
Burgers.
Oh my god.
That was robbed. Like, Fish Odor would totally put that trap together. Yeah.
And I feel like that was the most unrealistic part of the movie was the booby trap. Like, how much money could that stuff been worth that you would go to
install
that elaborate...
a trap door and
yeah, have a dog 100% there waiting.
Agree.
I think when you find out that he's the amusement park king, I think that plays... Oh, yeah. He's got
yeah,
that...
But that's...
He's got that kind of twisted, so it really wasn't about the amounts that he was doing. It really wasn't that sophisticated. He had the camera recording him the whole time.
So,
and,
okay.
You know.
That was almost a throwaway line, because until somebody mentioned it, I didn't even hear it on the newscast.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was you that even said it, and I was like, oh, that makes sense. I think it would have probably been better, this is me doing the Monday morning quarterbacking, maybe if we'd gone through the house a little bit more and saw, like,
some
more oddities. More posters of the grand opening of the amusement park. Something like that. That would have. Because I was like, what the hell are we watching? I was very confused at the beginning. I was like, what are we watching? Is this the fucking Goonies? What's happening?
Is it sad? I just sort of assumed that was 1994 security.
Before ADT.
Something I wanted to mention, though, because we're talking about the acting. Glynis John is amazing.
I hated hating her.
I did, too.
Yes,
I was like, God, I wanted her to get hit. I wanted someone to punch her
in
the
mouth. But
that's
what's so good about her. She played that role to perfection.
So
did. Like,
yeah.
Do you know one of my other... I'm pretty sure it was her. Do you remember when Mary Catherine Gallagher got her own movie, Superstar, from... Was she the grandmother in that?
I think so, yeah.
I don't like... those movies.
Well, none of them are good, but she played the grandmother
who
helped Mary Catherine create a dance number because she was some famous dancer. And one of her lines is one of the funniest things ever. She's like, you know, when I say you shuffle, you have to shuffle. And then she kept doing the thing. And she goes, and when I say you ooga booga, and somebody goes, what's ooga booga? And she goes, I don't know, but when I say it, you better fucking figure it out. Damn!
That kind of makes me want to watch that a little bit.
Just for that scene.
But yeah,
the rest
of
it's trash.
We'll
no,
just,
there's
we'll
a great
Google
fight.
That.
I also enjoyed when Judy and
Kevin
were having their arguments and seeing Dennis Leary, who didn't have to do much. He just had to react. It was great.
Yeah.
Like, because you have two partners who really don't even need him there for his reactions. And having him there was such a bonus because I think he represented the audience almost.
Oh,
he'd
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Jesus
yeah.
Christ. You're a liar too, Caroline.
When he's making them admit they're that
you're
they
a liar, Lloyd.
Yeah.
I did love that slow boil. Each fight they had got a little bit more aggressive and a little bit more of the story came out. And I think you needed Glynis Johns' character to be that catalyst. That
was the match. Yeah. She did the whole damn thing.
Oh, so brilliantly done.
Dennis Leary would just stand back and let him go. It was therapeutic, like what they actually needed to actually talk to one another.
Yeah, it's like the family ends up bonding together over this terrible mother that kind of pisses everybody off the whole time. And to the point that the plot of the movie kind of gets lost, like he ends up being like absorbed into the family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he becomes a part of the dysfunction to the point that they love him by the end of it enough to help him out.
And I think it's weird. It's almost like a reverse Stockholm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. They, because he started out with the thing, and while, like you said, at the end, he gets absorbed into the family, he did that just from them. Like, you know, they don't, it's like they don't start really loving him because he's their captor. He just becomes a part of their trauma. Yeah.
He's not a threat anymore because he's a part of it.
Yeah. I think, like I said, it's like a reverse Stockholm. They overwhelm him.
Even he says, I just want to hit her one time. Just let me hit her. I mean, I just want to hit her.
They realize that she's the one that's been holding all of them hostage this whole time.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The true villain.
And there was one thing, though, that I did not like. You know, I'm very big on, I need a little bit more clues to relationships. I think we talked about this in Lucky Logan.
Logan.
Yeah. Where I couldn't tell that was the sister because I thought he was banging her. Because I was very confused. Mm-hmm. It took me, because I kept thinking in this movie, it took me a while, and I was like, who's related
to who?
Yeah. I didn't know that it was the two brothers until way later in the movie.
Yeah, they didn't give you that was familia.
Christine Branson.
So did I. I thought she was the sister, the daughter or something, until later on. And I was like, damn it. I just, as a director or a writer, if you are establishing relationship, just give me a throwaway line, but make sure it's impactful as it's being thrown away. Like, oh, well, you know your brother. Or she could have said, your brother's wife is a horrible cook.
Oh, yeah. No.
That's all we would have needed.
Yeah, in the diner or wherever, something to give it.
I don't usually say a lot of things that I don't like, but in this case, I don't see the point of the entire storyline with the son. With him being blackmailing, him being a terrible person, him going to boarding school.
I think
J.K. Simmons. You could have done the whole movie without that and had a different reason for him to show up late.
I think it's just showing that he's dysfunctional too, and that his dysfunction is because, I don't want to say because of them, but it's like a branch off of their dysfunction.
No, it is because of them. Yeah. It is because of them.
Well, they sent him to that place.
They try to resolve it by sending him away. And it's not the right way instead of embracing him.
But I mean, they made it such an extreme thing.
No, you're right. It did. Yeah, he's lashing out so extremely. Well,
but I think you're right. And here's what I think. They could have easily just mentioned him being off at military school and they never even had to worry about bringing him back home.
Yeah.
But I think they needed that emotional thing of, oh, I'm going to hurt your son if you don't do what the hell I tell you to do. That's the only thing I can think that they would do.
Plus, again, military school is a big theme back then.
Yeah.
We don't really see much, you know, toy soldiers and things like that.
That's 100%. God, a great movie too.
Right?
Well, and I do think, though, that it also helps to, like, when he finally comes home, he's kind of okay with Dennis Leary's character, like, being a criminal. Like, he doesn't bother him that much.
He's a criminal himself.
But, it helps them understand him better by the end.
Unlike, said the police chief, they could have totally done without him. Mm-hmm. Like, with the bumbling cops and the, you know.
I did like the bumbling cops.
Yeah.
You didn't like? No, I think the cops could have just been done. There was too much.
See, I think they could have made the captain even more inept than the cops.
Yeah.
I thought it was so funny, though, at the end where he's like, get home, Gary. Like,
I mean, but they, like, the whole part about the VCR and the tape and over shit.
I would not
have laughed at that in the 90s. I'd have been like, it's just a normal thing. Now it's like, oh, they're making fun of the 90s, but they work because it's filmed in the damn 90s.
That does bother me, though, because that point in the film where they recorded would not have been where they left off.
Yeah.
So that bothers me because there was more film there in the middle. They would have been recorded having seen It's a Wonderful Life like a bajillion times.
Yep. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was the 90s and they showed it on every channel like constantly. Yeah. So maybe they flipped to a different channel where they were farther into the movie.
There's
a lot of credit being given there.
Yeah. They were watching the 8:30 show.
Yeah, the 8:30 of the
Okay.
Also, the drunk Santa guy was annoying, and I think that they could have had one of the police officers as Santa running around doing whatever. We didn't need to see him get drunker and drunker and go to different houses and all that kind of stuff. Like, that could have easily been cut out.
See, but I disagree. I like that character. I think the whole movie's about dysfunction.
Oh yeah.
And I
think the whole town.
And I love that they show that this guy, oh, my wife and I make fruitcake for everybody, we dress like Santa. I just love a drunk Santa, though. I get, like, bad Santa. Okay. So I love
bad Santa.
Yeah, I love
I've
that.
I've never seen bad Santa.
Man's got to do something to keep warm.
Yeah.
Immediately.
I do like that theme, though. Really? Like, that it's a dysfunctional family in a dysfunctional town where everybody's
just fucked up. I like that progression of him just getting drunker and drunker and, like, telling the kids off. Like, you can't drink any more milk and shit. I don't know. That's funny to me. But I can see where you're coming from.
The Santa suit could have come in very differently. I feel like it was a little comic relief. And it was a little light comedy in a dark comedy.
I would rather just stay with the dark comedy.
Yeah.
I think it breaks the mood too much.
I think that's why they did have all these threads with, like, having the police chief and all that. And then they had the drunk Santa and the back and forth between the homeowner people and the police chief. Like, they tried to make the community a character too and tried to make that its own plot.
Do you think it was successful? Because you keep saying the word try.
I think partially.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be like this wealthy town with no problems, but when you look deeper, there's problems on every level.
There was never a really good connection between the two storylines. Maybe if their family had been more connected in that community, but it seemed like they were already kind of removed from it a little bit anyway, because they were already kind of outsiders because their kid's the bad kid.
We had talked about it and I said, oh, this would probably been a play. This could easily be a play.
Oh yeah, easily. Yeah.
And to me, what I keep thinking is you get rid of the community aspect, you have a play that takes place in one location.
Oh yeah, the house. Oh, of course.
That's all it is. Yeah. And you have someone else with the Santa thing that the cop can still be the Santa.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm collecting for the policeman's charity. You know, it's Christmas Eve. Yeah. I gotta go run a couple more houses in Santa. You can still make all those things happen. I don't know. I was very disconnected from the town as dysfunction. I didn't even really think about that. So to me, I'm like, there was something that didn't work for me. And I don't know what it was.
Yeah, I don't know. I like that the more you think about it, the more layers you see. Like, it ends up being almost like a really early social commentary on incarceration culture, right? Because you have people being sort of ostracized from this community, and the way people deal with their problems is they send them away or they just kind of exclude them. But then in the end, you even get that quote of, we tried to send him to a prison, we're done doing that because it doesn't help. There's another way to approach problems.
And like, the once you fuck up, you fucked up. And there was no forgiveness. Like, with her having the affair.
Yeah.
And she was just done in the mother-in-law's eyes. And
she was done in the mother-in-law's eyes before
that. Well, but
that was... Everyone else was sad when they said they were going to get divorced. Well, Glennis was gleeful.
I think that's an interesting point, because they never really explain why Kevin Spacey doesn't want to get a divorce. They never really get it.
Yeah.
I think it was because it was his subconscious way of getting his mother. Because he was staying in the relationship that his mother doesn't want him to stay in, even though he's showing it's toxic. I think that was kind of a subtle nod to that whole situation, that he was going to work it out no matter what. And I think it was because of his mother.
I also think he kept saying to Judy, you didn't want to be responsible. You didn't want to make a decision. Yeah. Who does that fall upon? It's me. Like, it was a very patriarchal decision. I'm the one that has to make the choice because you won't do it. I'm the one that's got to do this. Yeah. I would love to go out and take all these bullshit classes that you take, but somebody's got to make sure that we have a place to live. Somebody's got to make sure that we have money to eat on. One of the things that I did really enjoy is during that last big blow up is he was like, you were embarrassed of where we live because all your other friends could afford to live in New York and we couldn't. And I was like, wow. And I feel like it even woke her up a little bit from her drunken stupor, more than the coffee did.
Well, yeah.
Was him saying, you didn't want to make a choice and you're pissed that I made one, but somebody had to do it.
I think that whole dynamic with her, like, giving him the fact that she felt that he turned off completely, and then him giving back, like, no, I didn't, but this is, I had to survive myself. They both had their coping mechanisms to survive.
Did anybody made it feel like a real relationship.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because I was getting ready to ask, did anybody feel like you related to a specific character? Because in that moment, I related to Lloyd, where somebody has to make the tough decision. When you've been put in a leadership position, sometimes you have to be the one that's got to say no. Other times you come to your council, which would have been, that's how we all met, was through a pride organization. But there were times where I would come to you all and say, what do we do? And then even though you said it, it was still had to be your decision, Jason. You were in charge. You have to make this choice. And sometimes it was really tough. But somebody has to make those choices. And in that moment, I was like, damn, I totally get where this character is. Totally related to him. Because I was like, damn, sometimes you do have to be the one that makes those really tough choices because no one else is going to help you do it. It's what has to be done. And there are other times that I kind of related to Carolyn where I'm like, well, I want to have fun. I want to be able to have money to go out and do the things that I enjoy. But the Lloyd side of me is like, you can't afford that, bitch. make a choice.
I mean, I was a little worried when we started the movie because it seemed like they were trying to make it very sympathetic to her. She was the one that was willing to work with him. He was the tight ass that wasn't even willing to tell him where the ropes are. Mm-hmm. Looking back on it with what we know now, it was like he was trying to make the decisions to get them moving on a path to get them out, and she kept derailing it.
Yep.
And so I was afraid it was going to get there and we weren't really going to get his side of the story, and that he was going to have his turnaround, have his George McFly punching Biff moment with his mom, but we weren't going to get his
progression.
But they gave that to us, and I really appreciated that, because that's what finally rounded out his character.
Yes.
Before that, he was just the dude with the stick up his ass.
Yeah.
And then he became, oh God, this is a real guy, and these were the problems and why he made these decisions.
I think that's what made me like this movie as much as I do, is minus all the community and the cops. And because again, I would rather you do straight dark comedy. I don't need the light shit. I don't need it. I get that more mainstream audiences probably would want those breaks. I don't need those breaks. I'd rather you just keep going, because it was building up and building up. But every time we took one of those breaks, we had to restart to build the tension again every damn time.
Okay.
And it was exhausting. And it's like, just cut that bullshit out. The tension is there. Like, from a directing standpoint, how great would it have been if we could have seen them film in progression this whole build up to the final scene of Mom, you're the problem. I would have appreciated it more. That's my complaint.
Because you could have almost done this like Arsenic and Old Lace.
Going old.
Like, where the only time that he's out of the house is when he goes out to talk to the cab driver and tell him to wait longer. So you could have him go out and like talk to the policeman down the block, like, hey, they finding me a Jerry? Or, you know, something to that equivalent where you would... We're turning it into a stage play again.
I know.
Because, you have that one, you go outside, the spotlight goes on the cop in the car, and he talks to him and gets the update and then goes back in. So I think that relates to how much this would be a really great stage play.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, as a movie, as it is, I like it.
I did. I liked it way more than I thought I was going to. And the more we're talking about it, the more I realized I liked it.
What I really like is going into this one, I had no expectations
one way
or the other, because I had read the synopsis on Wikipedia and that was it.
I do like that they didn't have Dennis Leary be more physical and violent when dealing with them, because it's a stressful moment. It could have been easy for him just like pistol whip both of them.
Yeah.
And I know
that's thought he was going to hit the kid.
Well, yeah.
And I wouldn't have been mad.
Yeah. And I do like, besides the cops just pulling up next to him while he's leaving on the boat, he just got away. You know, there wasn't that weird, like, they like to do that tension, like, oh, is he going to make it? Are they going to catch him? Is the police chief on his tail? You know what I mean? They just totally just subverted that and said, no, he gets away.
They didn't even use, like, the threat of violence to keep people in line, which is interesting because, you know, having seen The Menu, you know, you kind of looked at how people who are in captivity, why, you know, whether they're going to fight or not.
Yeah,
and at no point do you really see, like, you see Kevin Spacey's character doing it and refusing to give him the power of saying, no, we don't have ropes. But then she's like, oh, yeah, we have bungee cords, you know? But it's interesting because you never see them actually really try to fight back.
Yeah.
You know, they just kind of go with it because they're so stuck in their own stuff.
Well, and I think that, too, they did kind of try to allude to it that if they go along, he won't hurt their kid, because they were talking about that when they were tied up on the bed.
Yeah.
Like, in Kevin Spacey was just that pragmatic. If we just kind of go along and, like, you know, even though he wasn't trying to actively help him, he wasn't, like you said, he wasn't actively resisting him either. Yeah. He got the lay of him. Like, if we don't really cause a lot of problems, he's not going to hurt us. He's not going to hurt our son.
I'm going to go back to the acting for a second. We all know what kind of a comedian Dennis Leary is, right? And to me, though, this movie kind of showed his acting ability.
Oh, yeah.
Because he reined himself in
quite
a bit during many of these scenes, because I kept thinking he's gonna Leary it out here in a second. He's gonna Leary it out. But we actually saw a progression. We didn't get, like, you know, in most Christmas movies, they call it the Linus moment, where it's like, he didn't get a Linus moment.
No.
Right. He just left. He got away with it, and then he cussed out whatever the hell was
Murray
in the boat. But there was one line that he said that I really was like, and it, to me, it was like the thing that was his motivation. He said, oh my God, I kidnapped my parents.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can see that when he's like, when they're arguing, he's trying to block it out.
He's trying to block it
out. He had the trauma. So they kind of give you that he had trauma as a kid.
He had trauma as a kid.
With his parents arguing. And I think
this is me just guessing an actor's motivation, but for me, the character's motivation was, in a way, if I help these people out, I'm helping myself out in the same way. Because I think that's why he was so nice to the kid. Because it was really, I don't know. I think it was weird that the kid was like, take me with you. Because then I was like,
I do like that, though. He's like, what am I, the fucking circus?
Yeah.
I like how they push back on that. Like, it was like, a weird, it was a weird moment.
Yeah, and
they
weird.
Didn't try to hide it, because Dennis Leary straight out says, that's fucking weird.
But I think just coming from a childhood with trauma, I think that as a kid, you latched on to anyone
that's true.
You thought was...
understood you or...
Yeah, a scared. Better yeah. adult.
I mean, I get that.
I mean, he didn't really have a big epiphany moment. He didn't have his Linus moment or whatever. But I feel like... Like, there was subtly a thing where, you know, when he has them and it's just the two of them in the house plus him at first, and he has them tied up and he's like, you people don't appreciate what you have, you had parents or whatever, and goes through all that stuff. And then at the end, once he starts realizing that there really can be that level of dysfunction, like hating his fucking mom. And he's like, I thought moms were supposed to be whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
sweet.
Like, I think it did challenge his
worldview
too, that it wasn't all spoiled, and he saw the kid and that the kid had issues too, even though at first he was just like, you're a spoiled rich kid, you get everything you want, you're making problems for yourself. So while there wasn't a big epiphany moment on screen, I feel like very subtly there was a change in him.
He grew to understand them, that's the way to put it.
It wasn't an epiphany, but he grew an understanding.
Well, and that's true, because remember when he yelled at Christine Baranski, he goes, if you hit that kid one more time.
And I think that plays to his trauma too.
Yeah, I wonder if in his childhood he was hit.
Yeah.
Stop hitting the kid.
And I think that was just such a unique and skillful way of telling his story without telling the story. He didn't come out and give big soliloquies of his how fucked up his life was, how fucked up his family, how I used to get. He didn't have to do any of that. They let him tell his story through the actions of the other people and his reaction to those. So I think that was very skillful through the whole thing. Is that you can kind of understand his character without knowing a damn thing, like him saying nothing really about his childhood.
And I feel like that was something that the movie did well, is because at first you're like, these are all unlikable characters, like I don't like any of these characters, but then at the end it's not that you like the characters, but that you understand them.
Were
y'all rooting for the mom and dad to stay together by the end, or what did you want to see happen there?
That's a good question. You knew they were going to kind of try to work it out just through all the things they've gone through. I guess it does kind of fall into that Christmas movie miracle.
Yeah.
Because you see that they were so hurt, and then to see them, you know, maybe they can actually work it out. I mean, they do kind of allude to that, but they don't honestly just straight out say, oh, everything's perfect. Yeah.
I don't think they worked out.
Yeah. I mean, in the end,
I don't think they did. I think... What was it? Speed?
Speed with the... Speed. I was just thinking about that. Yeah,
when when she said in Speed, like, relationships that meet under traumatic experiences relationships do not built on last. Trauma.
Yeah.
This is a traumatic experience. Regardless of the fact that it brought them closer together, there's going to be residuals effect from this because, I mean, for me personally, if somebody tied me up, I'm going to have, like, real issues with that going on the rest of my life. I don't think that they're going to survive. I think that they're going to do the best they can for that kid, whatever that's going to be, but I don't think their relationship is going to survive.
Yeah, but at least maybe then it will be a more amicable split.
I think
I think they're gonna be fine just based on that earlier scene. They just need to get into the bondage community.
Yeah, find a healthy way to work out your frustrations. Yeah,
some shibari.
Well, I think there's, you know, if they can acknowledge, like, sort of going back to the prison theme of acknowledging that, like, the mother is the warden that has had them imprisoned in this, and that acknowledging how they've imprisoned each other and kind of working through that. I like to think that the relationship with the son is going to get better, that he's going to be able to come home or accept being at school for now and work on that relationship, and that they can try to repair it. But I don't know. I don't see them necessarily failing.
I really, though, would almost like an after scene, because I just, the mother, because you don't get any, like, growth from her at all. None.
You're not going to.
Because you get even, and that's what's funny, is because you get to the end and she's like, grandma's chewing through her gag. She's still so hardcore, like... Yeah. She's not going to change, but everybody's reactions to her are going to change, obviously. Because they've already said it. You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, it's already out.
Yeah, even the mother with, you know, Christine Bransky's character, when the kid's, like, taping her mouth. It's like, you're sure it's enough? I don't think, like, I like how they showed that, where the kids, they had a decent, because, you know, their parents seemed to be loving, you know, as a whole. That, you know, they gave them a Super Nintendo.
Yeah, Super Nintendo. Sake.
Yeah, that was amazing.
He called her Bunny.
Buying the affection.
So, yeah. So I think that they had more affection. affection, even though Christine Baranski was a little more harsh with her kids. But
she is almost like her mother-in-law.
Well, yeah, she was going down that path.
Literally the same. You know,
the Nintendo. You're giving him something, you're giving him everything, but you can take it away at any moment. Yeah. You know?
But you're hitting him.
Yeah, but I'm buying your love back with something that I know you enjoy.
So here's the scene we need post-credits. You have them, Dennis Leary shows up at the antique shop that they now own, and he's fencing stuff through them. And then they're like, we'll see you in Jamaica next month. And he's like, I'll see you there. Make sure the kid comes.
Yeah. Nice. I'm down. And I don't want it to be next month. It needs to be, we'll see you in Jamaica for New Year's Eve.
And then he's like, oh, and how was your mom's funeral?
Yeah.
Oh.
Ouch.
It's a dark comedy, people.
It is.
That's the kind of thing. Like, I was like, oh, he's giving her a loan payment as a Christmas gift. That's so gross.
I know.
Yeah.
It's like the money that you owe. Then rather than her forgiving 18%
interest.
I know.
But I'm pretty sure she said they're going to readjust.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with rates next year.
Oh, you got an arm loan? Is that what you got?
Yeah. She even lays it out. She just wanted to keep her son close to her. Yeah, so that she has some sort of control after the husband. Right. But that is the best line. When he says, lady, your husband's not dead, he's hiding.
Yeah.
I mean, Dennis Leary's got a lot of good lines.
Oh, yeah, movie. There's so many.
Started off strong with don't eat the penis, it's just garnish.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I coming back to the thing that we talked about at the beginning, I wish that it would have been marketed differently, and it needs a different title.
You know, I think getting towards the end of our conversation here, will anybody have a better title?
Like a play on words, so it could be something called, like, Being Leery of the Holidays. That's for you, John.
Womp, womp.
Have you seen some of the episode titles?
Dim's fighting words there.
He finally got it back.
Oh man.
I think a hostage holiday would be a funny title. Or holiday hostages. I just think The Ref is a really shitty title for this movie. If this movie did not take place at Christmas, sure.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
The alternate title that I put on this episode was Do You Dick What I Ear? probably not. And then I would call it what we're going to call this episode, which is A Christmas Quarrel, because I think it works.
I think that's cute. I would like that too.
I think on the heels of seeing Violent Night, I was trying to go with a song type of thing, and all I could come up with was Fight Christmas instead of like White Christmas,
See, I was thinking more of the Fight Before Christmas.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
It's Christmas Eve. It's Christmas.
That was my.
If you look at the community, you could still call it White Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It literally, yeah. Christmas brings out the best.
People of color in this movie?
No. Except for BD.
Yeah, BD is the only person that's not white.
His accomplice was pretty tan.
I think.
He was Italian.
Can we talk about him for just two seconds? I love his little accomplice dude that was helping him.
Gus.
What a great side character.
No, Gus was Dennis Leary. Murray.
Was Dennis
Leary. Murray. Murray.
I love that side character. He was exactly what I wanted from a side character. Sure. He was on there just enough to charm me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you want him to have this relationship with this lady in the boat the minute they meet. He was the perfect
And I like the little, when the cop answers, he's like, oh! He makes the noise and hangs up the phone.
There was a black woman in the diner.
Oh, that was it.
No lines.
You're right.
No lines,
when they
just
were
a
talking
look.
About yeah, the food.
Yeah, just a look.
The diarrhea. Dad, you had diarrhea.
I really like diarrhea comments in movies necessarily and jokes like that. But I enjoyed what they did with Christine Baranski, that every time she did something, she was contradicting herself. Because she brought up diarrhea and then her son repeated and said, that's not dinner conversation.
Yeah. Well, that was Jason's favorite line. You have a Merry Christmas or you go to hell.
Or like something about don't ruin Christmas and then she punches.
Yeah.
I like that they did that specifically with her character.
I enjoyed that all the main characters had a personality.
Yeah.
Like, nobody faded into the background. I think each person really had their moment. And again, when she said, who are you to talk to me like that? And she said, slipper socks, size medium.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, God damn it, I love you.
Yeah, she needed to do one of the three snap Z's
with
that.
Like I said, I enjoyed it when I saw it originally, and I've watched it a few times here and there. It's kind of one of those, it takes place at Christmas, but it's not really a Christmas movie, but it is,
It's ideal, I think, that it's at Christmas, because Christmas really brings it out in family, right?
Truth.
Yeah. Like, can't do this over 4th of July.
No, you're right. There's
a lot more liquor involved.
It's like, there are Thanksgiving could have been an okay
Thanksgiving
substitute,
would,
but other than that, you're right. Christmas
for the right family, Easter.
Yeah,
Easter's a big deal.
So, what am I going to use as the rating system?
Garnish?
How many recorded tapes?
Man. Trauma. That's it. Childhood traumas. How many childhood traumas would you give this movie? A 1 out of 5.
It's hard to rate something that's older sometimes for me. So I was trying to decide if maybe in the 90s I might have given it like a 4 and deducted a little bit for the slurs and the sort of aging of it. But I don't know. After we've talked about it a lot more, I appreciate the psychological levels of it. So I'm going to, I'm going to stick with a 4.
4?
Yeah, actually.
4 out of 5 childhood traumas.
Yeah, that's a lot of childhood trauma, but you know, we're gonna make it through.
I would give it 4. It's not perfect, but I definitely watch it again. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun, and I feel like it's one of those movies where you'll pick up little things every time you watch it a little more. Especially like their like expressions you may not have seen of the one while they're arguing or stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it'd be an interesting rewatch after the discussion. Yeah. And maybe Christmas next year.
I was flip-flopping between a 3 and a 4, so I'm gonna go in a 3.5.
3.5? Okay. Yeah.
It's no Event Horizon.
It's no Event Horizon.
So I've been thinking about this the whole time. And the more I talked about it, and the more I said that, I started to realize how much I really like this movie. I'm going to give it a solid 4, which is a pretty high score for me.
That is.
That is.
For the show. And I would have given it a 5. And I kept debating, and I'm not going to give it a 4.5. One, the slur is always, you lose a point. I think we could have done without the town.
Mm.
The town really, because like I said, I wanted it to be a straight dark comedy, go all the way through, build a crescendo, we hit it, boom, we're done. So I give it a solid 4. I really enjoyed it, and this is something that I could put on, like, I would watch this while I'm taking down Christmas decorations.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I would do with it.
But yeah, I'd give it a 4. I'd solid 4. Well, I wish everyone out there a happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Next month, we will be back to full and regular episodes. We're going to finally get around to the last of Sheila.
Are we? Finally? Because... Yo, we're going to. Jason, would you like to run through our list of where we can listen to us?
Sure. You can catch us on most podcasting apps, which include Anchor and Apple and Spotify. There's some things on YouTube. You can find maybe some random small clips on the TikTok. There's
Samsung. We're on Samsung.
We're on the how the hell we ended up there, none of us know, but man, we are killing it.
You might see an airplane go overhead with just a little message from us. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. And you can check us out at our website, missingmovieclub.com.
But check us out.
If there's an episode that you love to listen to and you think it's really good, do us a favor and share it. All the apps have shareability. Share it with a friend. That's how the Atlanta chapter started. That the podcast got shared with a friend,
right?
And
speaking of that, we'd like to thank Peter for being our guest.
Yes. Thank you.
Our first guest.
Thank you. It was my honor.
You're taking notes on how to
pay us later.
Yeah.
You're taking notes on
how to
Wait,
I'm not getting paid?
I know. He's like, wait, I was promised.
If you're an on the air member, there are dues.
Oh. Okay.
All right.
Well, are there? I'm just waiting to get paid.
I was going to say, I didn't pay none. But with that, I'm going to call this meeting officially ended and happy holidays.
We should go have some more enchiladas. Her name was Lola. She was a showgirl. Yellow feathers down to there, and a dress cut down somewhere. I don't know what the word is. Don't know the words because I am gay. At the Copa.
Copacabana.
They fell in love.
Are you doing the Minions? Copa Banana.
Banana.